Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, Mo, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analytics hour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 121. You know, one thing about the analytics industry is that analysts tend to change jobs pretty often. The notable counterexample, of course, being Dylan Lewis, a previous guest on the show. But with average tenure so low, what can a company do to make sure analysts stick around for a long time? Well, one thing that has been shown to work is actually the first thing you do, how you onboard people, and especially how you onboard the analyst. So what's so special about onboarding? Well, I'm glad you asked, because this is a topic that Tim Wilson has been dying to cover for a long time. Isn't that right, Tim?
Yeah, let's go with that.
You love the admin.
Yeah, everybody knows that's the truth. You're such a people.
Welcome to the company. Do your fucking job.
There you go. You've been onboarding. Okay, Mo, you've recently actually gone through an onboarding process, so you've got some fresh information that you can share with us, maybe.
Sure. So I've started in data analytics at an Aussie startup called Canva. So they kind of do like drag and drop features for graphic design. So you can do like, I actually, before I started working here, did my save the dates for my wedding on Canva. And it's officially a tech unicorn.
The Columbus Web Analytics Wednesday social media director. We are a paid subscriber to Canva for all our promotions. So Mo, are you an official spokesperson for Canva as well? So everything you say on the show.
There's a little bit of legalese we're going to cover here real quick. Mo is representing the Digital Analytics Power Hour in her own capacity, and is not a representative of Canva or its assigns. All views expressed are her own and of the Digital Analytics Power Hour.io. All right, let's get on to onboarding. So, yeah, Tim, I think, you know, you represent sort of the welcome aboard, now do your fucking job. And Mo, I think you and I are probably sort of in a different spot with sort of the importance of onboarding, but you've been the most recent onboardee. So what are some things that you've noticed? And you don't have to get specific into like how Canva does theirs, but like it's certainly fresh. It's probably brought up a lot of thoughts about, hey, this is how good companies do this or that thing, or here's something I've experienced at a different job, and it was really interesting to see how it's handled. I don't know. Do you want to start us off with anything?
Yeah. So I think, if anything, I have run sprinting away from Tim's perspective into the complete opposite. And that is that, so basically I was told the first 2 weeks, we don't expect you to do any work. The first 2 weeks is purely there for you to do induction sessions. We want you to go have coffee with as many people as you possibly can, go get ice cream with one of the founders. Like the whole point of the first 2 weeks is just to read and absorb and like find your feet.
And not sleep, because you've had like 6 gallons of coffee and 3 pints of ice cream a day.
Well, that too. I did revert to some iced tea this week because I had too much caffeine. But the funniest thing is that I actually sit in engineering. So I was going through this process with all these engineers that were just like, let me at the code base, let me at the code base. And they're like, no, you're not allowed to do that. And it's really frustrating. But I also think it was the right thing to do, because now you have all of this context rather than just kind of like digging around, figuring out what you can. I mean, like even just to the point of like someone from IT coming and sitting with it. So, and the Iconic actually did this too, where new starters start in a cohort. So you are only allowed to start on a particular day a week or on a fortnight or a month or whatever, and everyone starts together. And so they'll just have IT come down, sort everyone out with their laptops. They sit there for an hour being like, here are all the accounts you need. We're going to go through. Is anyone stuck on their password? Is anyone locked out? Like, does anyone need access to something that they haven't got? And so in like an hour, you suddenly have all your accounts set up versus sitting there for 2 days and like potentially over 2 weeks, information dribbling in about like, oh, didn't you realize you were meant to sign up for Jira? Or didn't you realize that you needed to ask this person for GitHub? It's all just done. And I think it's a like very quick way. When you think about it, it's like IT takes an hour of their time and you have 10 people onboarded.
I hope we recognize that I was being a little bit facetious with my...
Yeah, no, I just want to throw a legal disclaimer. The views of Tim Wilson are usually in contrast to his actual views because he's being sarcastic or cynical, and not the actual views of Tim Wilson LLC or its assigns.
Oh, shit.
We just keep going with the legal disclaimers for as long as it takes.
So when it comes to onboarding, there's kind of two aspects. There's the corporate, the everybody has to have access to their email, learn where, how to request time off, maybe even the corporate values and, you know, whatever programs there are. And then there's the analyst side, which usually means one, additional systems, but then separately, I mean, that's where hopefully most of the work goes. When I worked at one company in my career, there was an entire day of, I guess it was more orientation than onboarding, that was purely the corporate stuff, right? So they started everybody on Mondays or whatever. And literally at the end of that day, I knew I'd made a horrible, horrible mistake. And I had not done anything with the analysts. But
so sorry, what made you realize you'd made a horrible mistake?
Because they took an entire day to cover about 1 hour's worth of substantive stuff.
I reckon I've sat through more than a day of, because we've had probably 2 or 3 hours every day. And that's from finance coming to talk about how you get paid, how you request time off, legal doing a brief overview. Like every single department has come and presented for half an hour to an hour on what they do, who the main contact is. And I actually see a lot of value in that because it's really hard. Like, if you have a question about, I don't know, your pay, how do you even know who the hell to ask if they haven't come and spoken to you?
Oh, well, this was an enormously complex company. And in that entire one-day orientation, there was no covering of, here's how the overall company basically breaks down. I mean, I've kind of blocked out bits and pieces of it. I mean, it went from bad to worse. And yeah, I was gone in 9 months. But that was as much just, I don't know that any massive enterprise is a fit for me just because I'm going to be like, really? We just spent 30 minutes covering what a secure password looks like. Like that didn't need to be 30 minutes. Who the fuck are you hiring if we need to spend 30 minutes on that?
Yeah, but see, if IT is in the room while you set up your thing, then they'll be like, we use LastPass or 1Password, auto-generate all your passwords. And yes, I'm sitting here making sure you all do it. And that's done in 10 minutes.
No, I would say I work now at a company that actually onboards you before. So you get like a care. Well, I don't know how the non-remote workers work, but I had all my systems set up on day one. It was kind of brilliant. I did like 8 hours of work and wasn't even being paid yet. So that was genius. And that included reading through all the like soft, touchy-feely stuff.
Lots of companies are doing that, though. They're sending stuff before, and I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, so to be clear about, so I feel like I'm a good person to talk about Search Discovery's onboarding process because I've had the interesting ability to watch it evolve. As I was thinking about this show, I was like, have I ever been happy with how I did onboarding? And I always felt like I could have done better.
You mean how you conducted it for new people coming on?
Yeah. In 2013, when I started like bringing a lot of people to SDI and hiring a lot of people, initially I conducted the onboarding because we didn't have any kind of a people services HR function. And ever since we've hired actual people whose job it is, knowing how much work goes into it, I have such an appreciation of how they've evolved that practice. And I hear from new hires every single time we do onboarding that are in, at least in our office in Atlanta, I hear feedback and I don't even solicit it, but I hear positive feedback about how that process went for them and how much they liked it, which I think is just a great testament. And it's to me, like I've always believed like this is the start of the journey. This is, you know, it's the first impression, right? We've had all these discussions and interviews and it's time to kind of get everything together. This is the first kind of how our whole working relationship is going to go. You're setting the tone for how the whole thing is going to work. And so like, Tim, your example is a really good example of like, hey, we're setting the tone by letting you know we're going to cover in a whole day or an hour, you know, something that we could cover in an hour. Get used to this pace, wink, wink, because that's probably what's going to happen in our company.
I mean, at the end of that day was when I discovered I would not be sitting with the entire team that had an entire floor of a massive building, but instead across the street through the steam tunnels in a little room all by myself because they'd run out of room. Oh. And I had to carry my boxes of my computer over there. So it was poor. And not to totally log roll, Search Discovery's onboarding process, having onboarded a number of places as an analyst, was kind of an order of magnitude above and beyond anything I have told the story of what that looked like for me, which it's evolved even beyond when I started.
Yeah, they've done even more now. And that's what I like, is they're always trying to make it better and better too.
They should be though, but also they should be measuring it.
Yeah, that's right. And as we've grown as a company, that's sort of been raised, like, how do we raise the bar? How do we raise the bar? How do we raise the bar? And that's the right attitude. And I think for any manager, any company, I think that's the evolution you always want to be on. Because I don't think you're going to hit it square on the head on day one. You're never going to be perfect. And my approach evolved a lot because it was, for me, of course, when I did onboarding kind of individually, it was more about that person and what do they need and how do they need to do it for their job. So who should they be meeting with in their first week and scheduling those meetings and making sure they know who to go talk to for what and those kinds of things. But we didn't have some of the things you had, Tim, when you joined the company, which was like your systems are all set up and you had access to the right things. And those, that all came after we got our ducks in a row and as we grew as a company. And I think that's the thing, is I think people can take for granted that those things are happening. But if you do it well at a corporate level, and again, I'm just talking about the corporate aspect of it, because I've been in onboarding that's lasted a whole week, right? You're sitting in like a classroom type session. And it was like the one you described, Mo, where different people from different departments came in. And Dave, that was actually a really positive onboarding experience. I enjoyed it. I learned a lot. But I've also been in onboarding where my, you know, show up at 9 o'clock, you sit down in a conference room with somebody else, they show you, here's the project you're working on, and we'll open your computer and you can start getting to work. Like, that was onboarding experience as well.
I do think though that there needs to be like a central person that's responsible for it, and whether that central person is a group, aka team happiness, people and culture, HR, whatever fancy term you want to use. Like, I think basically when the organization gets big enough, the responsibility should sit with them for the majority of onboarding, with obviously the manager playing a vital role. But in a smaller company, I think it's almost harder because the manager has to be that onboarding specialist. And how do you do that when that's only like a tiny part of your job? I think there needs to be a clear understanding of whose responsibility it is for the overall experience.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I've never been happy with how I did it, because I think I was like, this could be better. And you just don't have time to be, when you're the manager who's having to do it just by on your own.
Oh yeah.
That's a lot. And again, size of organization makes a lot of difference, and people are different. Mm. So some people need that, some people don't. And so like your level of ambiguity tolerance as it goes, you know, fluctuates, or what kind of where you are in that spectrum. Like, it doesn't bug me if I have one meeting and then I'm off to the races. I'll figure out the rest as I go. That's just sort of, you know, my style. But that, I've learned, is not the style of other people. Like, you can't expect everyone to have that capability, and nor is it totally a strength, because you can get off on the wrong foot culture-wise and not really understand the organization if you're not, it's kind of like you talked about, getting that context. Like, what is the company like? You probably, Mo, have a better understanding of the culture and values and sort of vibe of your new company because of that process than you would have if they had immediately brought you in and be like, well, here's something we've been struggling with. Maybe you can like take a look at this thing and get started on this little one project, and you kind of like find your way through that one thing into the rest of it. So start big, go little, I think is a great approach.
But Mo, when you say that somebody needs to own it, and again, size of the company matters, but there's the owning of the structure. And maybe that's kind of my, when I say, you know, do your fucking job, that's coming from the side of having been a manager who is kind of passed down, you need to fill in this template for the onboarding plan. And that onboarding plan may or may not make the most sense for, again, put the corporate stuff aside. I really hope we don't talk about the organization corporate stuff. Fine. Get it. Need it. You got to have access to your systems. Mm. You need to understand the core values. You need to have the organization. But where does that then bridge to as an analyst? Because there are things, if you're in finance, you need to be onboarded on some aspect of your finance role. And an analyst, whether you're agency, whether you're in-house, it is different from a branching out systems, breadth of understanding. Who owns that? That's where I sometimes feel like it's broken down, that you get kind of a, you get a template from whoever's owning it centrally, and you're like, that's great, but a third of this I want to throw out and gut and replace with something else with dabbling in the data.
But if it's a good program, it shouldn't be like that. If it's a good program, then there is core corporate stuff everyone knows and needs to know and do. And then like what I've had here, where me and another guy joined the same day, we're both in data and analytics, and we've done a series of breakout sessions with different people from data and analytics, and they have stepped us through the business context of what we need to do for our job. So there is, there's.
So who owned that portion of it? Was that like the manager of the analytics group, or who defined what that should look like?
Yeah. So basically the concept here is very much about like coaches and mentors. So basically when you start, you're given a technical mentor who's in your business unit. So it's not your direct manager that's responsible. It's your mentor that's responsible. And in some cases, because there were a couple of us starting in the same area in the same time, then we actually have combined some of those sessions. So one of our mentors has run the session rather than needing like two identical sessions.
And is that for a defined period of time that they're kind of doing this onboarding mentorship role for 2 or 3 months or
6 months? So until you pass probation, and then you progress to a permanent coach, a permanent technical coach. And I do think there's different people, and there is a really fine line around, like, we've had a lot of sessions on walking us through some of the key code components. So the code practice here in data and analytics is actually very advanced, and it's pretty impressive to the team who've only been around for a year. And I wonder, like, I've worked with other people before that don't believe in this. So like, you should just go query the data and figure out all the gotchas yourself. Whereas I'm like, I actually think it's a big fat waste of time. If there is a bunch of things that you need to know about how the data warehouse is built, someone, either really solid documentation or someone walking you through it, or a combination of both.
Yeah. I feel like it's when there's limited documentation is when they say you should just dive in, and that's like, that's figure it out, because that's how I had to figure it out, as opposed to saying, but whereas if it's well documented, then somebody could walk you through it and it's wildly more efficient.
Yeah. But I still think the overall onboarding is a responsibility in a company this big of your people and culture team, or whatever they're called, team happiness. It's still their responsibility to make sure that those mentors are set up, that they're assigned, that they know what kind of, like, the mentor is the person that's placed to know what specific things you need to know for your job. But ultimately, the overall onboarding is ran and measured, and measured is through a series of different surveys throughout the entire onboarding experience, so that they can develop the program.
So is the onboarding program defined as a 6 month thing? Is it defined as?
It's technically 2 weeks, but there are a couple sessions going into week three, just because of like timing and calendars and leave and stuff. But technically onboarding is 2 weeks. But I think the bit for me that's always the toughest, and Michael, you made a really good point. I think one of the biggest tasks that a manager or a mentor, whoever is the main analytical person that's doing the onboarding, the biggest thing you can do is give that person a list of, here are the 8 people you need to go catch up with.
Yeah. Here are people that can give you great context for the work and the job and how it is.
But you either need to give the person you're giving that list to, or the people that they're going to, some sort of structure around, because those have been the, like, I don't know, I was supposed to have coffee with you. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I've tried it both ways.
Really? I just ask a heap of questions.
Yeah, but Mo, I mean, that's the thing, is you can't assume that everybody is going to be like you. Because I've seen how those have gone, like, really well, exactly how I intended. And I've seen the other ones where it's like, wait, you spent a half an hour talking to this person and you never covered like anything. They talked about their cats or whatever.
Does that matter though?
No, it's fine. I'm totally okay with that. But there's really great information about that didn't get transferred at that time. I was like, oh my gosh, that didn't get. So it's more like, oh, I need to make sure people have an agenda.
Got it.
Because I can't assume that they will self-create.
Yeah, as in that they'll get the context that they need because they don't necessarily know what to ask or how to ask.
Exactly, exactly. And so the more I've become exposed to it, the more I've become a fan of a more structured approach over time. That being said, I actually think there's real benefits to just having some of those sort of very informal, like talk to me about your experience types of things. And actually, a lot of times when people would start, I would on purpose get them together with someone who'd maybe started just 90 days before them and have them talk to each other about how this experience went and what they might expect. Because I was like, that is someone who's just went through this, maybe can give you some helpful tips. And there's also people who of their own volition will even create documents of like, hey, I just went through this process and I noticed all these things. So I put them together in this document. And actually a cool thing that Allison Murphy brought to the team was sort of this living document that basically be handed off to each new person and say, here's a document, help out with lots of different things that you'll need to know. And if you find something that isn't in here, your job is to add it. So you can pass it to the next person. And I think we've had limited success because a lot of people don't have that gumption, but it's truly a great idea of sort of like, yeah, let's build a corpus of sort of like informal knowledge as well outside of the official or formal.
This is bringing back some of the pitfall that if you're hiring, you know, an analyst two who's going to be the fifth analyst two on the analytics team, and you say, go talk to these people. I have gone through a few times in my career being onboarded and being told you should talk to these people, not given much context. Sure, I can ask, what's your role? And then they turn it around and saying, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to work? And I'm like, fuck if I know. It's day number 8 and I'm just trying to get the lay of the land and I'll figure it out. That has been extremely uncomfortable because then you're in the boat of potentially, you know, over committing. And I think that's, again, the person who is being brought on can potentially say, oh, I'll totally help you with all of a sudden, you know, the person who is the leech who will suck down anybody and everybody's time as much as they possibly can. And they've just done that to your new hire who's now committed to stuff they shouldn't have been. So I definitely think you need to send them out to talk to people. Yeah.
But okay. So here's the thing, and I'm curious to hear. So the last time this happened to me a few years ago when I was at a new company where my manager was like, I'm a massive introvert. I'm not really comfortable introducing you to people. And I'm like, sweet, no worries. Like, I'm a raging extrovert. It's fine. I will go around the floor and introduce myself. I'm a big girl. It's cool. And then I was managing some interns and I also found I was like, oh, maybe getting introduced to like 50 people in one day is just super intense. And so this time I, again, am working with a lot of introverts and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to slowly introduce myself to people in context. So like I'll be in my first marketing meeting and be like, oh, hey, we haven't met yet. Or like, you know, stuff like that versus just going around and introducing yourself to a whole floor. I feel like maybe that just introducing yourself to everyone in one bang is actually the right approach because otherwise you kind of are walking around and like getting a coffee and you're like, oh, I haven't met this person. Should I know this person? Like, what do you guys do? Or do you think the manager should introduce them to everyone on the floor? I don't know.
I just walk up to people and introduce myself. And I see that they're new. I'm just like, hey, you look new. I'm this person. I've been here longer than anybody else.
Ask me. They're like, nope, I'm just delivering a package, but thanks.
No, your desk is over here now. That's right. Welcome to the team. Oh, you need me to sign. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, I worked years ago. This was like my third job out of college and definitely was no import. Old school company. They'd just been bought by like Siemens. And there was the cranky old guy who wasn't going to talk to anybody. I mean, he was counting the days. He had a calendar. He and another guy had a calendar for 3 years daily counting down to their retirement. So that's what I'm dealing with here. And somebody was like, yeah, you should go ask Bud that. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I was 3-4 years out of college. And so I went in and I was like, hi, I'm Tim. I'm the new guy. And he was like, I'm Bud. I'm the old guy. And I didn't feel like he was being like warm and welcoming. Like I really needed to ask him a question, but because you do hit that point of kind of awkwardness. You're like, oh shit, I've been here for a month. I've seen that person. I know who they are. I'm a nobody. They have no idea who I am. So how do you actually break that approachability down?
Yeah, I'm not the right person to answer that either because I'm too introverted to just go walking up to random strangers and be like, hey, I'm new here.
Oh, I'm pretty good at it. But so one thing that they do here is that the people and culture team set you up on 3 coffee dates that you have to try and do over your first couple of weeks with people in completely different departments. So like I met with one front end engineer, one designer, one back end, and like we would not probably never cross paths because we're in very different departments.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel like there is benefit in that, but you're also like, oh, I've got so many stakeholders and like, you know, I'm working with a marketing department of 15 people and I haven't even met all of them. I don't know. Like, do you think that that's a useful idea or do you think it's just like one more coffee that Tim's going to awkwardly like bitch his way through?
As a matter of fact, I've got a meeting this Friday with some new hires that's been set up that exact same way.
Okay.
So we do the exact same thing.
Okay.
And actually, no, I think that's perfect because that's about building social constructs within the organization outside of your actual team. But, you know, it's like I might not work with this person for 2 years, but a chance for us to like just interact as two people that work at the same company is good for networking, good for like knowing who that person is, good for having an anchor within the organization of some kind. Hey, I've met that person. I kind of get a vibe from them. Yeah.
Okay, but so what about, I guess, how do you manage when you're the new analyst and everyone's like, oh, this person's joined. They're so great. They're going to solve all of our analytical problems. And you go to like stakeholder after stakeholder meeting where it's constantly like, this is the person that's going to fix all your problems. How the heck do you deal with that?
Humor. I make jokes and I tell them, I try to lower expectations a lot.
Give me some good lines.
I don't have good lines. It's in the moment. It's just, that's very scary because you bringing up Mo, I think something that's like, that's not, I would say a good example of how to kind of set someone up for success, right? Hey, we've been struggling. We finally hired an analyst and they're going to solve all of our problems. And all of a sudden it's just like, oh no, kabloosh, right? All the different departments are coming in to ask for what they need or what they've been struggling with. We've been struggling with for 6 months and we can't figure out what to do. And it's like, you're new here. So now you can help us. And the new person has no sense of prioritization. It's like piracy at that point. Like it's just like all no holds barred. And you're like, what do I work on? Is this important? Is this what I should be doing right now? And that's, I think that's the, one of the drawbacks of just sort of throwing somebody to the sharks, especially if you're on a small or you're just an individual contributor by yourself. And some people are analysts just, you know, doing the job themselves in their company, they need somebody to like watch out for them.
Yeah, but sometimes being on your own is a little bit easier because at least you can go directly to stakeholders and kind of, I don't know, have that conversation with them versus.
Yeah, but how do you know? How do you know what's important? And then you spend your first week and then your boss comes over and is like, you were doing what this week? And they really aren't going to hold you responsible for that. They'll just be like, oh, really? Okay, we got to stop this. Because you've been working, and we all know to deprioritize what this person wants.
I mean, the difference, because when I've joined somewhere where they have not had an analytics organization, they haven't had, I don't think a seasoned analyst, a senior analyst or a manager who has come up through the analytics rank would ever do that to an analyst because they actually have the experience. When I have seen cases where, and this has happened when I've worked with clients that, you know, in some cases they're bringing in a consultant because they're way, way behind. And often they're a year or more behind actually hiring an analyst. They're like desperate to find one. And so they don't have a clue. And so that person comes in, there's so much pent-up demand and they think they're helping by saying, I'm celebrating how awesome you are. Like you're bringing your magic wand. And I think that is something to be very, very cognizant of. And when it's non-analysts who are making the introductions, then I do think it's on the analyst to say, hold on, I have not really gotten my hands on your data. In my experience, you know, the data is always messier. I am here to be pragmatic and to help you out. And I want to understand your business, but easy there. And it does come to humor. Like, I mean, I've called out people who are introducing me saying, hold on there, unless you are signing up to deliver this, let's not get ahead of ourselves. But it can be an awkward situation.
That reminds me of, I was the consultant in this organization, but they brought me in and I was helping them out. And they're like, okay, we've got these tickets that have come in for this software. This is back when I was doing Web Trends software consulting. And they pull up these tickets that they had gotten. And the first ticket they pull up is 18 months old.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, well, as a starting point, maybe we should reach out to this person and see if they still care. Like, this a year and a half has gone by and they haven't heard a peep from you. I was like, maybe we should just sort of wait and see, like, hey, does this still matter? Because I don't think it does. Oh, good time.
Also, is that person that raised the ticket still at the company?
Well, yeah. No, that's a good question too in this day and age. Anyways, there's all kinds of extremes, but that's why you need somebody to help with prioritization. And I agree with you, Tim, the more senior you get and the more comfortable you get, you can kind of create that structure. And, you know, like I would feel no qualms pushing back on that kind of request today. At the time, I was just kind of like, yeah, I'm here to help. Whatever you want to help with, that's what we're going to do. And I think so you have to know who's joining the company and the maturity level of the company and the maturity level of the person, I think, factors into this. And again, this is more on the departmental onboarding and for an analyst specifically onboarding. That's probably a good tip that I think we're circling around, which is as an analyst, if you're coming into the organization, try to absorb a lot of information before jumping into a big project or task so that you can kind of get the lay of the land of like, what is the most crucial thing going on here right now?
So do you think that there's a difference though, when you're coming into a new role versus replacing someone, especially replacing someone that's still at the company? Because I kind of have that going on right now where I've come into a particular role, someone else is moving sideways to a slightly different team. And that timeline of when does she drop stuff and I pick up stuff, like when am I the point person, is really not necessarily fleshed out. And I feel like sometimes when you're new, it's almost easier because there's no shoes to fill. It's just, I need to get up to speed and there's no one I can ask because this didn't exist before.
So let me draw the very clean distinction that I am not speaking to your current situation with a current coworker, but that does remind me because there are cases where there is somebody who has either left or is moving into another role and they might not have been doing things the way that you, especially if you've got some experience, would want to do it. And you wind up having, I agree with you, it's easier coming in new and saying, especially if you just dig deep and try to pretend that you've got some self-confidence. This is me talking about myself and saying, this is the way that it should be done. I have experience. This is the way it should be done. When it comes in from like, well, gee, this person was spending an hour and a half every morning manually compiling a 27-tab spreadsheet. And that person looking over your shoulder saying, yeah, this is what you need to do. And you're like, this makes no sense. Let me ask the people if this is valuable. That can get really awkward when you say, how much do you have to continue to do it, what they did and the way they did it? And that kind of winds up being a, okay, maybe I need to do it to show that I can, but I also don't want to do it for so long that I've set the precedent. So I agree that new can be easier.
I feel like that's probably the one time I use the Tim tactic, which I don't condone at all, of I will...
The words and opinions expressed by Mo Kiss may be personally offensive to him.
No, but what I'll do is I will keep doing it the way that they've taught me. But then Tim was talking prior to recording about how Saturday is his quiet time. And I'll use quite often like a chunk of my own time to then automate that So I keep basically doing it the way that I've been taught, try and find some spare time on the side to automate it. And then I can be like, oh, look, I have 2 more hours every day. And I don't necessarily, like, I tend to do that very gradually. It's not like a, oh, overnight, I'm going to suddenly change all these processes. I tend to do it like incrementally.
Yeah, gradually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think probably the three of us may be bad examples on the fact that here we are recording a podcast about this stuff instead of enjoying our day. Oh. You know? you know, as sort of a self-selection bias type thing. But no, I think all of us spend personal time doing that kind of stuff because we see the value in it. It helps the company, helps us. It just makes sense.
Well, but it doesn't have to be personal time. I mean, I've done that. I've done that on the clock where it's like, yeah, no, this is just part of my day. It can be easier. I mean, it depends on the type of the company that you're working at, but
yeah. And I'm by no means recommending that people spend their personal time on work-related things. It's more that all three of us have that specific unhealthy habit.
That is true. But one thing I do want to touch on is code. And one of the experiences I've had over the last fortnight, which has been like fucking incredible. So I happened to stumble upon on Confluence a SQL guide. So that was basically the practices that we use for all of our code and the conventions and the rules. Mm-hmm. So I'd had a read through it and I was like, okay, this is really helpful, like best practice for our code base, yada, yada, yada. And then I got sent a PR, like a pull request in Git to review for someone else's code. And straight away, my mentor was like, oh, hey, Mo, have you seen the SQL guide? And I was like, yes, I have. And being able to have a reference guide, particularly for something like code or like experimentation analysis is another one where there's really good documentation on this is the methodology we use. This is how we use it. This is the code. This is why these decisions were made in the code, means that you can go straight from, like, you basically can start reviewing someone else's code straight away because you have a piece of documentation to tell you this is how every person in the team does it. This is a convention we all use. And I think that especially if you're in a bigger analytics team that is doing a lot of reviewing each other's code, that is something I'd really, really suggest to people to have, whether you use R or Python or SQL.
So camel case or snake case?
Oh, good question.
What's the one with the little line?
Underscore?
Yeah.
Snake case?
Oh.
Outstanding.
I knew the other one was camel case. I didn't know that was called snake case. You learn something new every day.
Wait, you're a fan of snake case and not camel case, Tim?
I'm a fan of snake case, yes.
Yeah, because camel case, if you use SQL in R and you use camel case, it gets obliterated when you run the SQL code in R. And so then you end up having, it's not actually camel case. So you kind of, if you're an R user, end up having to use snake case.
Yeah, I've written more JavaScript in my life than SQL. So in JavaScript, you tend to find people more into camel case.
I do think it's prettier.
I totally couldn't have rationalized mine in any way whatsoever.
Okay, moving on. So I like your point, though, Mo. Any kind of standardization or nomenclature, taxonomies, like standards, like here's how we do these things. Mm-hmm. Those are amazing. And we've always had ambitions to do more of that at SDI. And we've gotten some good spots, and we've gotten now a creative guide and all these different things, like so that people know, like, hey, when I want to set up my signature file and just all these different templates people can use. Those are all parts of sort of what I call a growing org, right? It's sort of like when you're a small company with just a few people, it's like, well, nobody's got time for that. Mm. But when you get a little bigger and somebody creates something, it's great. You're like, oh, let's take that. And we literally have a learning management system or LMS. And so we can create courses that people can do through the onboarding process based on all this great material that people put out. A lot of people don't know that Tim Wilson produces a secret video series on how to create great PowerPoints and send them out to the team. And they're friggin' amazing. And that's not really onboarding, but like all that content is like, that's a really good class. On like how to set something up, how to think through your structure, how to design it, you know, because if you've seen Tim Wilson present, you know, the guy's pretty solid.
Well, so, I'm a big fan though of like little video tutorials of someone walking you through. And I know some of this stuff exists on YouTube, but like walking you through, this is how you do this in Git, or this is, I don't know, how you run this piece of code. And I've seen a few of these lately. Donald, shout out from the UK, who a few months ago reviewed some code for me. For me, that's a really powerful way to have someone walk you through something, and if they can record it while they're doing it, and then that content is always there for someone to look back at and watch.
Well, and most started to talk about measuring.
Oh, can we just say that one of the really cool things, and then the team actually came back to me and they're like, oh, Mo, you've been filling out the surveys. I'm like, obviously I'm in data and analytics. I'm filling out your survey. But basically what they do is at multiple checkpoints in your onboarding, they ask you to rank like out of five, you know, like, do you have a clear understanding of what you're working on? Do you understand how your team contributes to company goals? Do you have all the tools and systems you need? And there's like five questions that are all just, you know, a number of stars. But I think that's such a cool thing to set up, even if you don't have a full, like, giant HR team, so that you can actually measure how successful your onboarding is by how that person's gaining understanding of their own role and what they're supposed to be doing and their own experiences. So if anyone wants some advice on what to include in the survey, I'm happy to share that with them in Measure Slack or whatever.
Very nice. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. All right, so you may have ideas or tips or tricks, but keep them to yourself because Tim Wilson doesn't want to hear it. However, one thing, it's just an onboarding thing for the rest of our listeners. One thing we like to do, and it is a pure expression of our own personal opinion and not the opinions of our companies, is go around the horn and do a last call. Mo, why don't we start with you? What's your last
call? Well, this one's kind of
been... Is it Canva related? That would be hilarious.
This is the SQL guide that we reference in our SQL guide. So basically, It's on GitHub. It's by a guy called Fred Benison. And basically he gives a series of examples of like good and bad SQL code and the conventions. And largely this is what our team have adopted. So I will share the link to that in Git. I also just think if you're into SQL, like it's really cool. Sometimes you don't think of what is good or bad until you read some of this stuff and then you're like, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So yeah, SQL guide for those who were interested.
Nice. Very nice.
You want to go next, Michael?
All right. Sure, I'd love to go next. We're a little less than a month away from one of my favorite conferences here in the U.S., which is the Digital Analytics Hub or the DA Hub conference. And it's a huddle-based conference, which means you're sitting down, not listening to speakers, but you're actually sitting across from other people and other organizations who are going through the same struggles and same triumphs and same challenges as you are, and you're sharing best practices. And sometimes it's eye-opening and you learn new things. Sometimes it's a little bit of therapy and you realize we're all facing the same challenges, but it's always been one that I've felt enriched and energized and excited and networked with some of the most amazing people in our industry. So September 9th through 11th, if you're interested in that, go to digitalanalyticshub.com. No, I'm not getting paid to say it. Would just like it a lot. And it's my personal opinion and not the opinion of Search Discovery or anybody else.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm just trying to make sure we cover all the bases, Mo. We're very, very, we don't want to get sued. That's all.
I feel like I'm going to turn it around and you do a last call. And I'm going to say that it's a last call from Search Discovery and not necessarily a last call that I personally endorse. Would that be?
Yeah, sure. That sounds great. I can endorse this last call, but go ahead, Tim. What's your last call?
So this will appeal to a niche. It's one of those where it's a book, and it's a book for those who are at all interested in baseball, but are also in analytics. So there's a guy named Ben Lindbergh who pops up on a podcast I listen to periodically. He's the co-host of a daily podcast on baseball called Effectively Wild, which just seems daily.
I know.
So he and a guy named Sam Miller both work at Baseball Prospectus, whatever. But a few years ago, back in like 2014, they found an independent league baseball team that agreed to let them basically call a lot of the shots from a planning. And the book that came out of it is called The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, Our Wild Experiment Building a New Kind of Baseball Team. So these two guys basically got to do all the analytics stuff at a independent league, pretty low level team, the Sonoma Stompers. And it's kind of about their experience going through that. So it's not a Moneyball kind of cleaned up to tell this glorious story of how analytics like totally transform things. It's got more of a hitting the practical reality of human beings and taking analytics and putting it together. And they alternate writing the chapters. And what wound up getting me to read it is that Ben Lindbergh has a new book out called The MVP Machine, which I have not yet read, but it's how baseball's new nonconformists using data to build better players. So for those who are kind of mildly baseball inclined, I highly recommend The Only Rule Is It Has to Work.
All right. Well, you've probably been listening and you're thinking to yourself, that wasn't included in my onboarding, or I've got so many better tips. I would love for you to share them with us. And the best way is to get you onboarded to the Measure Slack, get you in there and start sharing with the community there. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got other ideas or things you've seen that have been great, terrible, onboarding, good, bad, or the indifferent, they don't have to expressly reflect the views of your employer. We've made that pretty clear. And
there are no words.
Again, just trying to be abundantly cautious in this age of GDPR and things like that. Anyway, we would love to hear from you. You can also reach us on our LinkedIn page or on Twitter. You might not know, but you should know that we've got a producer named Josh Crowhurst who's helped us create this show, and we're very thankful to him. And if you find him on social media, give him a high five as well. All right. Thank you so much for listening. I think I speak for Tim and Mo when I tell you, no matter where you are in the onboarding process, one thing you should always do is keep analyzing.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at Analytics Hour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Analytics. Oh my God. What the fuck does that even mean?
I can't get my career coordinator. No, wait, my trip advisor. My flight advisor.
Flight attendant.
My flight attendant.
Peanuts or pencils?
Oh my God.
All views expressed to the party in the first part. Yeah. Well, and of course, if anybody does sue us, they're certainly entitled to as much revenue as we've taken in. We'll just give up right away. You can have as much money as we made. Well, Tim, why is your arm in a sling?
That was my 4th of July.
What happened?
Well, what we came up with was that there was a shark, and my daughter was there, and so I had to punch the shark, and that was okay. It was when I took my daughter with one arm and threw her out of harm's way. And all of a sudden now you've got that personal connection established, and that will last for.
Wait, you seek personal connections, deep and meaningful ones?
They didn't say deep and meaningful.
What's the timeline to friendship?
Remember, the things expressed by Tim Wilson are.
If you have not seen vows exchanged and traveled across continents, then there is no deep and meaningful friendship there.
I do introduce Tim as my close personal friend.
What's Google's called where it's lowercase? It's not quite camel case because it's lowercase for the first. That's not camel case. That's.
Yeah, any new word is the first letter is capitalized.
No, but whether the first one with an initial capital versus not is a.
Officially down the rabbit hole.
It's a thing.
Well, I think it's a pretty important part of onboarding for the podcast because we got to figure this out. Tabs or spaces, Tim? That's where we come to this. Okay. Moving on.
When we onboarded you to the podcast, which has been quite some time ago, it was pretty clear that we don't say frickin'.
a show.
We should do a show. Are we ready? Let me onboard you.
Rock flag and welcome. Do your fucking job.